I'm Leanne, I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, and I love to see the faces and everything here because you're my family today. You are my family. And I came into these rooms on May Day of 91, and I was a person who had all the answers. I had all those answers. I knew exactly what you people needed, and I heard your stories, and I heard how bad you people were and how terrible your life was, and so I stayed to help you get well. And the longer I stay, the sicker I get. So I think with God's help, I'll be here until the day I'm off earth. I went and did everything wrong I was told to do. I'd been given instructions, and I did it all backwards. I didn't do it right. I don't recommend you do it the way I did it. But it worked for me. I was told to go to 6 meetings before I found a sponsor, so I went to 3. And I found this lady, and I'd seen her at another meeting, and she sat, and she was so prim and so proper and had her hands folded just so nicely. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? Yeah, maybe that I'll get. Okay, I'll ask her to be my sponsor. And she later admitted she did it all wrong. Surprise. She said, well, I'll sponsor you if you promise not to slip, because I'm leaving in 30 days and I won't be able to sponsor you. And I said, oh, what do you mean slip? And she said, don't worry about it, just do everything you're told. I said, oh yeah, I plan to. I mean, you people need help here. I'm going to stay. I'm going to help you people. And she said, call me every day. I'll give you something to write on every day. Write down your food. Read it to me. And if you have any questions, ask me. After 3 days, she said, who are you calling? And I said, I haven't called anybody. She said, get on the phone. Here's some numbers. They're waiting for your call. I said, oh. After 30 days, I was stepped up. And then, well, in the very beginning, she said, go get those chairs. Set them up. We need them. I said, yeah, I'm doing it. And then, of course, they had to be put away, and I helped. Now, you have to remember, I was very busy before I came into these rooms. And so I told her, I don't know that I can go to 3 meetings. I'm busy. And she said, what are you busy doing? And I told her some of the things. I made up a few, I think. And she said, you take some of that hand sewing and stuff with you, and you sit in the meeting and you do that. That'll give you that extra hour. You won't be wasting any time. And after a while, she said, you know, I think you could come now to a meeting. You probably have enough time. You don't need to bring anything with you. And I said, well, what am I going to do with my hands? And she said, you're going to fold them in your lap and listen. Okay. So through the years, we've laughed. We've had a lot of chuckles. By God's grace, she is my sponsor today. And she moved away. She had no business moving away. I felt like I'd lost the best friend I ever had in my life. But I still have contact with her. And we don't see each other as often. That's the only difference. We are so close today, we're more like sisters. And she lives about 3 hours from me in the high desert. And she comes down from the high desert, and I go out to the low desert, and we meet in between. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful relationship. What a gift God gave me. What a gift. You know, I've learned to count my blessings. In the big book, on page 20, it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And so helping to meet their needs. Yes, I set up the chairs. Yes, I took down the chairs. The meeting I went to after my 30 days and my step up, she said, here's the format, read. I said, wait a minute, this is the leader's code. She said, yeah, I know, that's yours. You pass out these things and get it started. I can't lead a meeting. Oh yeah, you got 30 days, you lead a meeting. And you'll be sponsoring. And I said, I can't sponsor. I don't know enough yet. You know enough. If you don't know the answer, somebody will help you. Okay. I was putting chairs away after that meeting. And somebody came up to me and said, would you sponsor me? And I said, I have to say yes, because I know my sponsor will say, yes, I'll try. I'll do my best. And later on, when she would share, she'd say, you know the reason I picked my first sponsor in this program? Because she was giving service. She was doing something for this program. And I thought, if she can give service, that's who I need. So today, I can tell you without a doubt, this program saved my life. At 1 year in this program, I ended up in the hospital having 3 surgeries in 3 months. And the last one, the doctor himself came in, and it was a Sunday morning, and he said, we have to take you back to surgery. He said, you may not come off the table. But if I don't take you to surgery, you will die. And I said very openly to him, if it's time for me to go, I'm ready. But I also know if it isn't time, I will be here. And he said, we'll give you some blood. And then I said, when are you going to do it? Oh, this afternoon. I worked in nursing, and at that time, they didn't do surgeries on Sunday. And I told him so. He said, oh, it's so much easier to get the operating room now. Yeah, right. Well, they couldn't give me enough blood, and so they waited, and he said I'd be first up on Monday morning. And do you know, from the time I was in on my first surgery until I was done and woke up well and up and alive again, I had someone always at my side from these rooms, and I have never forgotten it, because my family was back east, and my mother commuted back and forth because of the surgeries, but she couldn't get here and be here all the time, and someone always stepped up for me. And that's the service that this program gives us. That's the love this program gives us. You know, these are the blessings we get in these rooms. And how do you carry that message? The only way I know to carry that message is to give back what I've been given, not only in the rooms, but in my everyday life. I try to live in a positive manner today. I look for the positive. And in our area, and maybe across the country, I don't know, but they always say, have a good day. Doesn't matter where you are, have a good day. And I always turn to them and say, I have no other plans. And you know, I don't. Sometimes people say, oh, are you done? You're going to go home? No, I just have no other plans today other than to have a good day. And if I plan to have a good day, I will. If I plan to have a bad day, you know, what you put out there comes back. Good luck to you. That is a complete change of attitude. But you know, everything in my life I learned backwards. I learned it all backwards. And I found that out when I came into these rooms, and I stayed in these rooms. When I didn't feel like going to a meeting, I went to a meeting. I told my sponsor, I said, how long do I have to go to 3 meetings a week? She said, until you don't want to anymore. And I go to a meeting a day or more because I eat every day. Every day of my life, I eat. Somebody says, are we going to have a meeting on the holiday? Do you eat on a holiday? Thank you. I eat on a holiday. So I share my experience, strength, and hope with anybody that wants to hear it. I can tell you where I have done things that have been difficult. I can tell you how I've gone through rough times. I can tell you how every rough time I've ever been through that I can recall, when I didn't think I was going to live through it, I just wasn't going to make it, has been used for greater good in my life today to help another person. I've been there. I know what it's like. And I would much rather go through those rough times today with the experience, strength, and hope that you have given me than to go through them the way I did many years ago. I never in my wildest dreams thought I could live so happy, joyous, and free. As a result of my sharing my program, because of the way I live, not because I cram it down somebody's throat, but because I live my program. I carry my program where I go, and I live my program. And even getting coffee in the morning or going to the grocery store, it doesn't matter. That's my life, and I want my life to be a good life, so I carry good messages. And as a result, it comes back. It always comes back to me. And I have been blessed beyond measure. I will never, ever be able to repay what's been given to me. And I know that every day is a gift in my life. Every day, I want to be a gift that someone else receives, because that's the precious present. That's the present I get to give. And I'm blessed to be able to do it. My mother saw me, or I was going to see back east 8 months after I got into this program. I didn't want anybody to know that I was in this program. Heaven forbid it might not work. None of the others did. Oh, well, guess what? She said, I'll just do the same thing you're doing while you're here. And then I left. And she said, I think when you're gone, I'll just try and eat the way you eat. And then she came out here for the winters, and she sat in the back of the room and addressed Christmas cards. And I said nothing. And everybody was friendly to her. And we went out for lunch one day, and we knew the head waiter in this restaurant, and he said, oh, we got this most wonderful thing. You've got to try it. You've just got to try it. And so he brought one with two forks and put it in the center of the table. And she said, don't you touch that. And I said, I have no intentions of touching that. I'll take care of it. So she takes the fork, she has a bite, she puts the fork down, turns it around, takes a bite, puts the fork down. And when we walked out of that restaurant, she said, I need a sponsor. I said, don't look at me. You know who's in those rooms. And many years later, she apologized. She became a mother and a grandmother to many people in these rooms. And people have good memories of her, and what a gift that was to me, that she had enough love to give. I feel like I've got enough love to give to people here, too. I try and give it to everyone I meet, and I try to share my experience, strength, and hope with those that would like to have it. I'd like to close with what it says in the big book one more time. I love my big book, and that's my travel big book. So it says, though we knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober, that motive became secondary. It was transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. And that's what I try to do today. Thank you so much for letting me share.
I forgot one thing. This is Miss Leanne's last weekend as a board member on WSO. Will you all please give her a hand?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Barbara P., Arizona, Area 2. Very, very grateful to be here, very honored to be here amongst all of you. Could you please tell me the 10-minute mark, and then a 1-minute mark? Thank you. I want to thank my wonderful sponsor. Thank you. It's so nice to be close to you. Right with you. I would like to qualify and then tell you what my experiences have been in service and kind of wind in my friendships and how my higher power seems to work with all of that too. I started way back, well, seems way back for me, 1999 in Michigan. And surprisingly, we had a very, very active group in Birmingham, Michigan at that point. I knew 12-step programs would work for me. I was in 12-step programs at that point, so I was excited to find a food 12-step program. And I went in, and boy, it did work. I just lost 32 pounds faster than you could imagine. The part that I wasn't wrapped up with were all those tools every day. So, as you can imagine, you know, the 32 pounds stayed off a while. Not too long, though. It was probably not more than 6 months I was struggling. You know, I could see some weight coming back on. And although it took a while, it took like 11 years for those 32 pounds plus 10 more to come back on. That was my time. It just took that long for me to get that gift of desperation and to come back in these doors again. And in those 11 years, it wasn't that I didn't go to any CEA HOW meetings. It's just that they were also dwindling where I was. I was going between Michigan and Arizona at that point. We had a few for a while in Arizona, but not too steady. So I actually returned right here to Las Vegas. Las Vegas is always near and dear to me because of all of you. And I've told you this before, it was 2010, and it was the Area 2 Assembly, which would have been in February. And I kind of feel like I had my hands out. I'm hoping this is going to work. I'm willing to give it a second serious try, but I'm not sure. And I did decide I would select a sponsor who seemed to have a good, strong program. So it took me until Saturday night of that assembly, or maybe Sunday morning, to select her. And she hesitated a minute, and then she agreed. So I was off and running at that point. So we were living in Arizona at that point, and I went back. We did not have steady current CEA HOW meetings. So I was phone bridging it. And I was happy with the phone bridge. You know, you can kind of isolate, but, you know, work it at your own time. It fits your schedule pretty well. But there also was a voice inside me, and one of our members here today said to me at the very end of that assembly, we had something called a car wash, which I loved, where everybody whispers something into everybody's ear. And one of our members said to me, you know, maybe you'll start a meeting in Phoenix. And I thought, oh, sure. And after I got back to Phoenix, and I was working those phone bridges, and the program was working for me, and I was thrilled, and those 42 pounds were trailing off. The back of my mind, I knew I needed to try to restart a meeting. So the assembly was February. It took me 6 months to lose the 42 pounds. And then it was in December, and I thought, boy, I probably better try to restart a meeting. And I was able to do that. I still had some of the old outreach lists. I don't know why I kept them, but I did keep them. And I decided I would call some people on that list that I thought might show up, and I'd also write them an invitation. And for some reason, our meeting place was still available to us. It was our Wednesday 5:30 meeting, and my goodness, you know, a few people showed up. So that gave us a live meeting. And then things just kept blossoming. Those members, and this is the we of the program, those members decided, well, you know, we should really start another meeting. So I think our Saturday 8:30 meeting was the next meeting that started. And for a while, we had a Tuesday 5 p.m. meeting. And then most recently, we've started our, well, maybe 3 years ago, we've started our Sunday 3 p.m. meditation meeting, which it's a heavenly meeting. I thoroughly enjoy that meeting. And we have another 3:30 Sunday meeting, kind of the other side of Phoenix. So our meetings were getting in place. And then... And if you haven't seen this wonderful inverted triangle, this is our structure. And you know how it goes. It goes meetings, it goes intergroup, it goes area, the next step is World Service Business Conference, and then World Service. So I look at this, and, you know, one step is connected to the next. So we had some meetings going, and then there were people that would say to me, well, you need to start an intergroup. And there was one lady, I would pick her up. She lived on my beaten track to the Wednesday meeting. I'd pick this member up, and she'd always say to me, you need to get that intergroup started. I'd say to myself, really? You know, it's just going to be more work. Why would you? What do you mean? You know, let's just get to the meeting and pray and get back home and eat dinner. So that was rattling. And then we have another member in our group. And, you know, she just sort of seemed to skip over the intergroup and almost go right in as a delegate. But now I find out she was phone bridging it, which I really knew. And she jumped into an intergroup, and then area two, and then a delegate. So these friends, they pulled me along, and they pulled me along, helped me to become more comfortable with the next level of service. So we were able to start an intergroup. And if any of you are thinking about starting an intergroup, I can see now that the real purpose is it gives you a voice. You can attend the area to me. Yes, it's more time. It is more effort. It's more commitment. But it gives us a voice, and it gives you a vote. And to see the inner workings of this whole program, it's absolutely amazing. So... Okay, so we got our intergroup started. I just wanted to also say, if you are in a spot where you're thinking of starting an intergroup, it really isn't that terrible or a lot. You know, World Service sends you those bylaws. You just fill in the little parts in red. The thing is, you have to have your members to take the positions. You need a chair, you need a vice chair, you need a treasurer, so, you know. And I'll tell you, when we started ours, I think we only had about 6 members to fill those positions, and it was like, I'd sort of walk around my house thinking, what am I doing with this? You know, is this logical? But, you know, it's our higher power. It just seems to take place. The members show up, they take their spots, and the job gets handled. Well, next step is the area 2. And to this day, I guess I was a rep for our intergroup at Area 2. I don't know if I'm verbalizing that correctly, but that was my next step. And then this year, I was able to be a delegate at the World Service Business Conference. Thank you, which I have never seen anything like this. I've never seen a meeting with Robert's Rules implemented and a meeting where the policies came up, which I can see are wonderful changes and additions to our program. I could see conflict come up, but it was handled graciously and democratically, and there was a resolution, and it was very inspiring, very, very empowering. So I do want to get a pitch for everybody. If you are thinking about a next level, another level of service, yes, absolutely. The service can activate all of my fears. But, you know, our friends help us. And I think I'll just back up to, thank you. One of the first things I did was to lead a phone bridge meeting. And, I always tell people when they're starting to lead a phone bridge meeting, if you forget something, somebody else is going to tell you. We all work together. We just work together. And I think I just would like to start to conclude with a couple of God shots. In Arizona, we have another member, and she used to double check. We have a facility called the Franciscan, I believe it's the Franciscan Retreat Center or Renewal Center. And we have a member, and for the last few years, she would stop by that center and double check on dates that they're available. And then she'd text me and say, Barbara, they're available these days. Do you think we should try to do something, like an assembly or a retreat? And I'd say, boy, I wish she'd stop stopping by that place. we don't really need to be doing this, But she kept checking on those dates. And then after I became a little more involved with Area, and I enjoyed the Area 2 assembly, I went to Salt Lake, I went to Dallas, and, I can tell it's our turn, it's Phoenix's turn to help with that assembly. So we, at our business meeting at 3 p.m. today, we can't do it till they let us do it till they vote us in, but we are volunteering to put on that assembly. It will be Dallas this coming March, but then Phoenix is volunteering for 2019-2020. So, and the part I was going to tell you was last Tuesday, I had just returned from a wonderful trip to Michigan to see our children, and then I was home Tuesday and then Wednesday heading here. Well, I like to play bridge and I like to play golf, so I had my bridge game all set up Tuesday. Well, wouldn't you know, three of our members were going over to tour that Franciscan Renewal Center, and I was only too happy that they were doing that, but my point is, we work together, and I guess at that business meeting, what really impressed me was everybody needed to be true to themselves. We all had a vote. It was clear to everyone how we were voting. And this program, certainly it promotes good health. It promotes faith in my higher power. But it's gentle and it's kind. And I get excited about a world with those attributes, with those kind of people running it. So I'm so happy to be here with everybody. Enjoy this conference and try a next level of service. You will just love it. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brendan. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. You know, we panelists were we were promised a second lunch if we got up here and spoke. So, but seeing we're not getting it, I'm going to set this aside. I'll do 5, 5, and 5, please. I'm so grateful to so many people in this room that have both come in before me and have come in after me. And there's so many faces here that I know, and it's really only through service if I don't see you in live face-to-face meetings. And I want to talk about my four stages of service that I wrote down for you. Early on, when I sponsored somebody, I had a sponsee say to me, he was struggling to do service, and he says to me, "Well, it's easy for you, you know, service is easy for you." And I was like, "How dare you tell me that service is easy for me? I'm the most selfish person in this room. Don't tell me." And the way that my selfishness works is not this Machiavellian, like, take everything away from you guys, but like through anxiety or, you know, lack of self-worth or whatever you want to call it, I'm so afraid I'm not going to get mine. And that's something that, you know, it goes on in practice on a daily basis. And the most recent example, I'm signaling my wife, like, can you bring me a water? And I see her over here with four waters. It's like, four waters? It's like, oh, yeah, these guys probably want water too. So even to this day, I've got stuff to work on the selfishness. Here's my four stages of service. First one was fear. Second one was obligation. Third one I call research and development. And the fourth one is joy and freedom from bondage of self. So the fear and obligation, what happened was, this is my first abstinence. I've been in program for a little over 3.5 years. I'm maintaining a 63-pound weight loss. And I looked at those tools like, I have to do all of these because God knows which one is the one that is keeping me abstinent. And so, you know, that fear of losing my abstinence, I had really strong sponsorship, losing, you know, my sponsor, losing face. And all those things are indicative of me running away from something. So the way I like to describe it is, and the way I would describe it in the beginning is, I have to do these things, I'm losing weight, things are great, and I do not want to go back to the way things were. I can't go back to that way. So keep that in mind for the later stages. And so along with that, the obligation was that once I got in and once I started doing, you know, a phone list, or I was, you know, standing up as a greeter, now I'm obligated to that. And, you know, in the beginning, I really thought that the main purpose of service was to keep the meeting going and to keep my butt in the seat, which I think that is a stage. I think that, you know, a lot of times that is a valid enough reason to do service. So I thought, oh, this is the thing that's going to get roll me out of bed at 10 in the morning, go and greet, and then, you know, I'm there for the meeting. Or if I was given a reading that, you know, was like choice of vision for you or the promises, it's like, oh, I got to stay to the end of the meeting. So that commitment, though, for me personally, it was like, I like to refer to that as the white knuckle stage. Because honestly, it's like if I'm doing that with a closed heart, which I was doing, I don't know how long I can do that for. You know, I'm doing it because all of you tell me to do it. I'm doing it because service is slimming. You know, service is freedom from bondage of self. But I really hadn't let that in. I just was doing it really as just this commitment. And that running away that I spoke of. That brought me, so the fear and the obligation, I think those were necessary stages for me, that really brought me to the experimentation. So here's what's great about a solid rock bottom, is that I came into the program at 43 years old, and guess what? Life was not working out the way that I thought it would or should. You know, and I think that's true for probably a lot of us. You know, my wife and I joked at one point where somebody was in the room, person A was saying, person B just came into the room new, but I don't think they're really a compulsive eater. And my wife says, somebody's walking into a CEA how meeting, you think they're having a good time? You think they're there just because they're so happy, joyous, and free? It's like, we got to get those things, you know, as we get in there. So that experimentation stage really was life not working out the way I wanted. I had all these values that I thought should work. The perfect job, You know, I had the perfect relationship, but the thing about the negative thinking that we talk about, I used to go to therapy, which is, you know, outside issue, but just to mention it in the sense of my therapist saying, I'd complain about work, I'd complain about family, I'd complain about my car breaking down. She'd say, what about your marriage? Yeah, that's fine. So anyway, the job, it's like, so that feeling of if only these things would change, but they weren't working. And I started to feel like I was running out of shopping days here on the earth. So I was still doing the service, but then it was like, this is where my spiritual experience, you know, when the big book talks about sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. This felt to me like it was both a quick and a slow, in that the experimentation was, what if I start trying to find value in different things? Now, I couldn't meet any of you guys in the eye. I couldn't think about helping anybody else but myself because I was so afraid I wasn't going to get my own. But what if I started to do that? I'm just going to, and again, this is an invitation to you guys if you feel that this resonates with you. It was a trial and error for me. It's like, let me try to actually be helpful and care whether or not, you know, this person gets a phone list and care whether or not I'm representing in the inner group and care whether or not, you know, I stand up as an available sponsor and see what happens. Not because you guys told me to do it, but let me just see what happens. And, you know, I started looking for the spiritual lessons. And this is when my heart started to open up, like I talked about, the closed fist versus the open heart. And I have to say, I started to get really surprised because in my disease, I think it's me versus you. I'm either way better than you or I'm way worse than you. But I'm never, you know, there's this saying that talks about you can't be afraid of the waves if you are the ocean. And I love that because it's like we're all here together. I happen to be talking right now. You happen to be listening or checking your phone or whatever you're doing. But, you know, we are all in this together. You know, we are family, as Leanne said. And lo and behold, you know, some of the things that I heard, an example of it was just, you know, yesterday I chaired the convention last year, so busy with so many different things. And somebody came up to me and said, you know, you really helped me last year. It's like we never know how we're all affecting one another. So that trial and error, if kindness is my default mode, it's like, look how many people I affect. It's amazing. I'm amazed by it. You know, I quickly want to tell this story that my dad is a very, very gregarious person, and we grew up 3,000 miles away from where I live now. And I saw a woman from my high school, and I hadn't, you know, been in high school in 20 years. And I said, yeah, I saw her in the restaurant that I worked at. My dad says, wow, you went to high school with 199 other people. What did you say to her? Oh, I didn't talk to her. It's like, it wouldn't even occur to me that I have anything to say to this person. And then I actually bumped into her again a few years later, and I told her that story. And I said, you know, I had a great conversation with you at the fifth year reunion. I don't know why I didn't say anything. And she started going to tears and saying, you know, I felt like such an outsider in high school. Like, you saying to that means so much to me. Now, that's of an equation I could never think of, you know. That's God working for me, and that's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. So, you know, I hope that I've met everybody in the eye as, you know, I've been here. And I hope that, you know, my visibility has, through service and, you know, through meeting you all through service, I hope that that's, you know, brought a little bit of joy and a little bit of friendliness and a little bit of light to all of you, because I have to say, you know, I'm getting the gift of it much more than anything that I'm giving. And you know, again, we never know how we're affecting one another, which brings me to that joy and freedom of bondage of self, you know. And again, the invitation, it may not feel when you're first doing it like this doesn't feel like bondage of self being freed from me. But, you know, it's if you're looking for it, if you're looking for those spiritual lessons, it's amazing where it comes from. You know, when we start to look for the similarities, I had somebody share, you know, sometimes we can get so wrapped up in personalities and you know, the personality that you think you clash with the most says something that, wow, that's exactly like my story. And that's an amazing thing. Remember I talked about running away from something. And I had a very dear friend of mine who's been in the program for a long time, and not my wife, say to me, I had said that thing about, I just don't want to go back to the way it was. And she said to me, it's not even that. Look at your life right now. Look how amazing your life is right now. Do you want to throw all that away so that you can go have your second lunch on the couch? It's like, why would you give all that up? And, this program is amazing because we can always get closer to our higher power. We can always get closer to our program. And we can always drift away from it, too. It's like if I stop going to meetings, stop working the tools, stop doing service, guess what? I am going back to the second lunch, and I am going back to not giving any of these three water, and I'm going back to not meeting any of you in the eye. I just wanted to say, last thing I want to share about is practicing these principles in all our affairs. As we were asked today to speak about freedom from the bondage of self and how that works in our life today. I just made an amends to one of my cousins who happened to be working at a wedding that I was attending, not family related. And I said, I skipped your wedding, and I skipped everybody's wedding, and I don't know why I did that. I just, on some level, I just didn't think that anybody really cared whether I was there or not. But again, if my default is, I don't know how I'm affecting all of you, so I better go to kindness, I get to practice these things. I can't tell you the number of times in the last 5 years, with spiritual development and really with this program and the way that we work this program, to hear people say, you're such a grounding force. You I felt so nervous and then I calmed down. It's like, me, Deb, they say that to me. That's amazing to me, Because if you talk to somebody from 20 years ago, they would say, you? Oh, my God. You're the grounding force? Poor people. But it is amazing how you can work that, that theory and that sort of practice of service. I've been to weddings. I've been to family reunions. I've been amongst family and friends. And I've been to funerals where if I'm coming from a place of service, the most recent example, we lost one of my cousins way too young. And in my family, we're wallowers. We like to wallow. And my dad, he started to go in that wallow place. And I turned to him, and this was his sister's son. I said, Dad, you and I have been through this. And our job here is not to wallow. Our job is to look her in the eye and let her know it's going to be okay. We've been through it. She will get through it. And we both rose to the occasion. And funerals are never fun, but it's like that truly is the release of bondage of self. I'm not thinking of how painful things are for me and how sad I am. But it's like, what can I do for all of you? So this weekend, I hope that I can do something for you. And if you haven't done so already, and you feel that thing of not looking somebody in the eye and looking downcast, when we cross each other in the hallway, take a look in somebody's eyes that you haven't before, that you may not know, or greet somebody that you don't know, and just, open up your program to that one other person. And I can't promise you that you'll feel it right now, but sort of like what Ruth was saying about the media, maybe it's 5 years from now, but at some point, the more we open our heart and the more we come from that place of service, it really is more of a freedom of bondage of self. I love all of you. I love this program, and thanks for allowing me to share today.
Does it work if you don't hold it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Nanette. Oh, 5 and 5. Or 5 and 4 and 1, something like that. Yes, that's 15. Very good, thank you. I'm Nanette, I'm from Utah, and my abstinence date is December 26th, 2008. And I am so grateful. Just being here with all of you all, since I started that day, there were no meetings in Utah at all. And so my first meetings were on the phone bridge. In fact, my meetings for quite a while were on the phone bridge. And On December 24th, I called my sponsor, who's here today, who I love. And she had told me about CHOW. I had learned about CHOW from her and from another 12-step sponsor, who's also here today, 9 years before. And I had rejected it. I wasn't interested. I was pretty sure there was an easier way. So I tried that for a long time. And I tried just working the steps without having a food plan, just hoping the miracle would somehow translate into my body, and it never did. And I was praying one day, and I know right where I was in the living room when my higher power just literally just sweetly tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Nanette, you know, you could try CHOW." And I was like, "I could. They eat actual food. This would be amazing." So I called her, and she told me I had to listen to 6 meetings before she would sponsor me. And the next day was Christmas. Like, what a gift. What a gift. There was a meeting every hour. And my nest was empty at that point, and I went upstairs, and I wrapped the rest of my presents, and I listened to you, and I listened to you, and I listened to you. And I had never, ever in my life heard such recovery in the realm of addiction from food. Never in my life. And the story in Utah just kind of followed. It's just, we're just so grateful. As I thought about what I might share today, what came into my mind was the idea of our serving through trying to carry the message. Because I really think that's one of the greatest services that I can do in my life right now is carry the message to other people. But it is not easy. And so there are a few things I have to keep in mind. First of all, I have to keep in mind compassion for others. And I don't know if your higher power taps you on the shoulder the way mine does, but sometimes just little things happen in my life, things that aren't related to recovery at all, and my higher power will go, "Hey, does that remind you of something about recovery?" So I want to share some of those things with you today. And these are things, these are lessons I'm learning. I'm not perfect at all at it. But the first thing I'm learning is that I always have to be ready to share. When I go to the gym in the morning, I'm ready to share. I'm like, where is she? Where's the girl who needs this? And what am I going to say? And so I kind of have a little standard way that I sometimes do this while I'm standing at the mirror putting on my makeup. You know, we strike up a conversation, and I'll say, are you enjoying the gym? How's it going for you? And the other person will say, well, how's it going for you? And I say, before I lost my weight, and they're like, before I lost my weight, I used to always exercise this way at the gym. But now that I've lost 85 pounds and kept it off for 8 years, I do it this way, and then I got them. They're curious. And I don't tell them some food plan. I tell them I'm an addict. And they're like, oh, wow, I never thought of that. So I'm just, when the lady at the store says, when I go in to buy something and she goes, oh, well, you're so petite. I'm like, holy cow, would you say that again? Nobody's ever said that to me before, that I'm so petite. And then I tell them that I've lost weight. How did you do that? Woohoo! The other night, people were trying to feed me. I was at something that I was in charge of, and everybody in this building in 14 rooms that I had to go check on, it was their last night, they were having feasts. And in every room I walked in, somebody asked my husband and I if we wanted food. And one of them, this man, was so insistent. And I finally said, you know what, I weigh and measure all my food, and I only eat 3 times a day, so I'm finished. But thank you so much. It looks beautiful. And this girl who was standing or sitting in front of me, she turned around and she said, I need to do that. How did you do that? You know, how do you do this? And she texted me while I was here. I got a text from this girl. I don't know her name, but I'm text her back. So I'm so excited. So stories that teach me things about people. My whole life is wrapped up in my family. I have 19 grandkids, and they mostly live by me. I have 5 kids. So Weston, He actually lives at my house. And the other day, I dumped my Mother's Day flowers. They were old. And I said, sorry, Marv, I've dumped the Mother's Day flowers, but they were beautiful. Thank you so much. And pretty soon, Weston comes in the room, and he goes, Grandma, those pretend flowers that are in the bathroom, they're doing fine. And my higher power said, and all those pretend people, Nanette, who tell you they're doing fine, they're not. The other day I was driving in a car, and I was sitting in the front seat next to my daughter-in-law, and her two little girls were in behind me. And all of a sudden I heard my granddaughter say, sorry, Mommy, sorry, Mommy, sorry, Mommy. And I turned around and I looked at her, and she was one credit card at a time, one piece of money at a time, one insurance card at a time, taking my daughter-in-law's wallet apart and throwing it on the ground and saying, sorry, Mommy, sorry, Mommy, sorry, Mommy. And I felt my higher power say, you know, on some level, we know. We know we have a problem, even when we're tiny. You know, we on some level, some it's pretty deep, you know, but on some level, we know we are struggling, and the people we want to help, they know, and they know they're not fine. Funny story. I kind of think this is a story about my grandma, but my mother told me this story, that one day she went to the doctor, and the doctor told her that he needed a urine sample for the week. So she saved her urine for the week. And I even think she like had to take the bus back to the doctor. Like she, yeah, no kidding. Like she didn't hear the word sample or something. And sometimes God taps me on the shoulder when my mother tells me that story. And I think, you know what? Sometimes we just don't get it the first time around. I didn't get it the first time around. I got to step 6 and 7 the first time around. And I said, sure, great, thanks. And that's how I did step 6 and 7, you know? So we don't get it. And the people we're trying to work with don't get it, and it takes time. Sometimes we don't get it because it's free. The other day I was tending two other grandkids, and I looked out in the park, and they had all these little brown bags, and it was fall. And it said, for sale, 1 cent. And in these little, I thought, what are they doing? And I went out in the backyard, and they were filling these little bags with autumn leaves. And nobody wanted any. Like, none of their little friends came to get them. I mean, they were free, right? You know, and sometimes we don't want what's free. We want to pay a lot for it. If it doesn't cost a lot, then, you know, then we don't want it. Maybe some people we're trying to work with are like my grandson, Easton. He's 4. He's Weston's cousin. And my daughter was asking all of her kids who their best friends were. And it came his turn, and he said it was the fridge. And no kidding, she says it really is his best friend. And, you know, for some of the people we're trying to work with, the fridge is their best friend. And when we tell them this, 1 minute, oh my goodness, okay. All right, I'm going to tell one last story. The other day, it was the day I needed a pack to come here and get all my food together. It was Thursday. And my mother is blind, and she's 86, and she was traveling kind of from Salt Lake clear to the top of Utah to Logan on a train, and I had to get her on the train. She got on the train once. She has macular, and she walks with a cane. She's going to meet my brother to go to the operas up in Logan. Such a fun thing for her to get to do. And I wanted to make it work, and I did not want her to fall again on this train as it lunged. And so I helped her onto the train, and I got her sat down and made sure she was next to really nice people. And all of a sudden, I looked out the window, and the train was moving. And I said to the man, I said, you got to let me off this train. You got to stop the train. And he said, no can do, lady. No can do. You can get off the next stop. And it was, you know, it was quite a ways down the track. And then I knew I'd have to wait for the next train to come back. And so, three more. Okay. Well, anyway, you know, you just never know where your service is going to take you, actually. That's what God said to me as I sat down. And I'm like, I got so much to do, God. And he just said, you know, just sit on the train and watch Utah go by for a minute, you know? And you're going to be okay. We never know where service is going to take us. My little granddaughter, Hattie, she lives with us also, and she always comes in on Sunday afternoons, and she always says, she's six, she says, Grandma, I'm a Kitchener. I'm a Kitchener. Can I help you with dinner? I'm like, Hattie, you're so cute. So we tie on our aprons, because I'm a grandma, and, you know, she wants an apron. And last week, she... You know, I don't know how good a Kitchener she is. She's little. And last week I taught her to peel carrots. And she thought it was so cool. She says, I can't peel them as fast as you, Grandma. And I said, that's okay. And, you know, I don't serve as well as other people do. I really don't. There are people here who just serve and serve and serve in this organization. And people in our organization in Utah who just serve and serve and serve. But I'm so very, very grateful for the things I'm learning about service. From participating in here, the patience I'm learning to have with others. It's hard to be patient. My nephew, they don't live with us, but they just bought 40 acres in Lander, Wyoming. And so they bought a baby donkey. And the other day he was trying to train the baby donkey. And he said to his wife, Amy, he said, this donkey is so stubborn. And my niece just looked at him. She's like, it's a donkey. It's a donkey. You know? And sometimes when I'm trying to work with people and I start feeling that anxiety, I'm like, it's an addict, Nanette. It's an addict like you. She's like you. And between compassion and trying to keep my service between me and God instead of between me and you, I am truly blessed. And with that, I pass.